Thank you. We are blessed, aren't we?
Yes.
We are. Good morning.
Good morning.
Last Sunday, we looked at how each one of us can be a healing presence on this planet by widening our circle of compassion and helping to bring peace to the world. And our homework, if you remember, what was our homework? Dog ate your homework. Homework is work that takes you home, by the way. Our homework was to practice our bodhisattva training. Remember that? So how many of you practiced? Oh, one person did. When we talk about the bodhisattva, we're referring, in this case, to the Chinese bodhisattva, the Buddhist goddess of compassion, Kuan Yin, who was right on heaven's doorstep when she heard a cry from the earth, and she stopped and turned around and came back and said, "I'm not leaving until everyone has reached nirvana." And that's what a bodhisattva is. And we explored how each one of us can be that kind, compassionate presence, that this is an archetype of who we are in our greater self. And so today we want to continue on this exploration as we really look at how do we do that? How do we do it? Because compassion is sorely needed right now. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yes, it is time. It's time for the power of the heart to rise up and be expressed on this planet. You know, there's an ancient prophecy about this that comes from the indigenous world. It's called the eagle and the condor. And what this prophecy says is that when the eagle of the north flies with the condor of the south, the spirit of the land, she will reawaken. And so this prophecy speaks about human society splitting into two paths. The path of the eagle, which is the mind, the masculine, the industrial, and the path of the condor, which is the path of the heart and intuition and the feminine. And here's what it says, that beginning in the 1490s, anybody remember what happened in 1492? Beginning in the 1490s, at that time, that a 500-year period would begin, that and during those years, the eagle people would become so powerful that they would virtually drive the condor people out of existence. But during the next 500-year period, which started in 1990, the potential would arise for the eagle and the condor to come together, to fly in the same sky, and to create a new level of consciousness in our human family. Now, is that cool?
Yes.
But the key word here is potential. Potential. Because the potential exists for us to join together, mind and heart, male and female, mechanical and organic, to find a way to work together. And in spiral dynamics terms, for those who are interested in such things, it's about moving from an orange industrialized culture to green egalitarianism and beyond to a holistic, integral worldview. Right on the cusp of this happening. But in order for that to happen, it's time for the power of the heart to rise to its place in our culture. Charles Eisenstein is the author of the book, The More Beautiful World Your Heart Knows Is Possible. He is without a doubt one of my favorite authors, and he's written a new book called Climate, The New Story. And as you might guess, he's talking about climate change. And while in this book, his writing is more specific to ecological health of the planet, the principles he is espousing as the antidote for the healing are equally relevant in many different areas of cultural ills, whether it's violence, poverty, homelessness, addiction, all those things. It can all work for that. The answer to the healing, no matter what it is coming together of heart and mind. My talk title this morning is What is Your Heartbreak? That kind of gives you a little bit of an inkling of where we might be headed. Because the essence of Charles Eisenstein's thinking is that we are not going to change our behavior because we learn a new fact. That's not going to happen. More has to happen. There's more of a connection in the heart. And the reason for that is because we are now living in what is known as a post-truth era. It's actually got a name to it. But here's what that means. That objective facts are less influential in shaping public opinion than appeals to emotion and personal belief. In other words, we're making decisions based on emotion and belief rather than any kind of strictly logical thinking. And depending on where you get your news will determine what you believe to be true. You see, post-truth thinking says, I feel that that's true. Do you know what I'm talking about here? Now, at first glance, this seems like a bad thing, right? Somewhat of a drawback for change or transformation, because if, for instance, someone's has made up their mind that, you know, a certain political party is evil, no amount of facts will sway their opinion. How do you have a conversation with someone who's ignoring factual information? But even worse, what if I'm the one doing it? Turns out I can't be pointing fingers at anyone else, because I'm just as liable as people on the other side of an issue to be immersed in post-truth thinking. And so I have to begin here in my bodhisattva training. I've got to start here. I have to ask myself, what beliefs do I have that are blinding me to the facts? And this is where we all need to begin in our desire to change the world, to identify where I'm participating in this cultural hypnosis myself. Where am I plugged into the matrix? Where are my own inner blind spots? Where are my projections or my biases? What stories are being made up by my mind that I am believing? That's the beginning work for us. And then after we identify what that is, the work becomes integration. And this is where the heart comes in. It's in the realm of the heart that we do this healing, releasing work with self-compassion. We need to be bodhisattvas to ourselves, too. And in the nurturing, safe environment of self-compassion, change can now take place. Transformation can happen. But we have to clear out our own crap first in order to be vehicles for emergence to happen. So in our post-truth world, we need to become aware that facts about climate change, for instance, will probably only be impactful for the folks that already believe those kind of facts or think that way, typically. I mean, sometimes facts can wake us up, especially if they're pretty sobering. But by and large, people who are firmly on either side of an argument are there not because of facts, but because of personal, emotional investment of some kind. And in order to heal this, I have to see what stands in my way, where I'm doing the very same thing, having the same blind spots that I'm accusing someone else as doing. So that's what I'm saying. The work starts here, and I think it's imperative that we get to this. Because I think the greatest danger we have right now in this country, but also in the world, is polarization. You know what I mean? When I first moved to this country, it was 2003. Things were heating up for the election. And I remember thinking, already? See, in Canada, where I'm from, you know, we have three-month elections. Done. But I noticed something that I hadn't seen before. And that was how polarized the two sides were. And again, in Canada, there are more than two main political parties. And don't get me wrong, there is plenty of conflict in Canadian politics. But that one side or the other thinking, the for us or against us kind of thought, It's not as evident as it is here. Because when there are three major parties, there has to be support, there has to be connection with them, they have to cooperate, they have to work together. But here, with only two, elections feel like a war zone to me. And that polarization shows up in many different arenas. So not only are we not listening to facts, but we're firmly entrenched in our viewpoint, thinking the other is completely wrong. And that is a recipe for violence. And it's all a consequence of the belief in separation. But there's good news. Are you ready for it? I think the post-truth era might just be the ticket for us to finally come together and discover our hearts, our commonalities, what connects us. Stop arguing facts and find what touches our hearts. Find what connects us together. We have to find a new way. And maybe this polarity can be the catalyst for the rising of the heart energy. And even though we may not agree on all sides of the issue, we can find some emotional connection and begin our conversation there. See? And that kind of practice is necessary if we're going to have any healing on this planet. If we're going to bring a sense of connection to this country, regardless of political beliefs, if the eagle and the condor are going to fly together. You know, the only way to teach love is to be love. And it can be done, I'm convinced. But we're the ones to usher it in. Do you know that about yourself? I read the story about two groups of women who were on opposite sides of the abortion debate. And they came together with the idea in mind that they would see how they could work together and find some commonalities. And the first thing they got clear on was that neither one wanted any woman to be in the heartbreaking situation of having to make such a painful decision. They both agreed they wanted the abortion rate to decrease and that prevention was something they could all get behind. And so that became their starting point, and they worked together to help make birth control available in the area to young women who previously did not have access. They also provided education around reproductive issues. And they worked together, and they greatly improved the situation. But the story doesn't end there. In working together, they all became friends with each other. When they were finished with this project, they decided not to part ways because they had a heart connection. They loved each other as friends. Now, do you see the value of this?
Yes.
Together, they became a healing presence through the heart, even though they were on opposite sides of the debate. So, what healing needs in our world are calling you? Where do you want to bring a healing presence to this planet? What breaks your heart? For me, it's a child being hurt. Anytime I hear about a child being harmed in any way, my heart breaks. And you know, I saw that very clearly one day when I was reading an extremely dry, theoretical, fact-based book called The Business Plan for Peace, by Dr. Cilla Elworthy. She's a British woman who's committed to bringing peace to the world. And in her book, she reports that the 2016 Global Peace Index calculated the economic impact of violence to the global economy in 2015 was $13.6 trillion. Somebody figured that out. And for 1 year, that's what $13 trillion looks like. And she's also broken down and estimated the costs of having preventative peace-building systems in place globally. Turns out it's $1.2 billion for 10 years. $13 trillion for 1 year, $1 billion for 10. It's a minor fraction of the cost of war. By the way, it's a brilliant book, but as I said, pretty dry. Statistics, descriptions of team accountabilities, you know, budget amounts. But as I was reading her business plan, she pointed out that had all these measures been in place in Syria early on in the conflict, all the violence, all the suffering could have been averted. And as I read that, what flashed in my mind was a horrific picture of a little guy. How many of you remember this picture? It went viral at the time. Little guy looked about 4 years old. His home had just been bombed. He was sitting there in shock. And as soon as I thought of that little boy, I'm not going to put it up on the screen, it was all over for me. I just completely collapsed in a pool of tears. I'm not talking a little dab at the eyes. I'm talking sobs here. It just took me there. It doesn't help that he looks a little bit like my little Liam. but regardless of that, all I had to do was read one sentence, and it sent me there because that's my heartbreak, a child being harmed. Charles Eisenstein writes that through the stresses and strains of life, we form protective emotional calluses on our hearts as a shield to feel safe. These calluses form a sort of armor to try to avoid the grief of compassion, fatigue, and overwhelm. But then something pierces the armor, and all of the grief that's hiding pours out. That's exactly what happened to me. The grief poured out. And the truth is that all of us have a tender heart, despite the calluses that might cover it. We need to find what will pierce that callus, what can touch us deeply, and having a child hurt in some way is what moves me to action. It brings out my mama bear. I just want to kick someone's ass. And then I get to my grandmother's heart that says it's probably not the wisest course. See what else we might do. But after I had my meltdown, I felt a clarity and a lightness that was not there before. At least I couldn't locate it. Suddenly the sun came out. I felt stronger, more peaceful, more able to deal with the heartbreak than I had before. Only when we're in that state can we do this work, you see? Only when we feel our feelings deeply and not run from them and not resist or avoid or push away. When the heart is broken open, the power of love streams out. And so I asked my heart, what is one action I could take that might help in some way, that might make a difference in a child's life who's been in such trauma? And I got prompted that I am now in the process of applying to volunteer with World Relief Spokane to mentor refugee, oh, there's our calloused heart right there. To mentor refugee children in Spokane with their homework and learning English. And that feels right to me. That feels right to me. It may not solve the greater problem, but it's one thing I can do to connect, to share my heart, to share my time with a child who has been through trauma. And that's some of the kids. And of course, there are many other areas that pierce the callus for me. The inhumanity of the prison system is one, and that is why the work I do with incarcerated people is so very dear to my heart. Or marine life dying from the plastics in the ocean. I'm now trying to be as plastic-free as possible. These are the things that touch me deeply and can move me into action. So what moves you into action? What pierces any emotional calluses you have protecting your heart? What personally affects you? Charles Eisenstein tells the story of visiting his wife's childhood neighborhood and having her break down when she witnessed the degradation of some wetlands that used to be her playground as a child. She had a heart connection with that beautiful spot, and to see it destroyed was devastating to her. It pierced the callus in her heart. And it is incumbent upon all of us to find where our heart is touched and pay attention to that. When we connect with others in a place that touches both of our hearts. It doesn't matter if we have different political views. When duality is erased, unity rises up, just naturally. And when we find a place of commonality that has emotional significance for us, that's where we join. You know, just after the election, Jimmy Fallon sent his reporter on the street out to find people who had opposite political views. Remember, this is right after the election. This happened. And then each couple had to find their commonality. And they ranged from both agreeing that hot dogs should only have ketchup on them, nothing else, to having the same favorite cartoon when they were kids, to being dog lovers. And as each pair found one thing that they both loved and agreed upon, they would start high-fiving each other and hugging and dancing and laughing together.
Ketchup,
yes, somebody said ketchup on hot dogs, they get it. Now, it appeared to be just a silly, frivolous thing they were doing on this show, but I saw something different. I saw wisdom. I saw people actually coming together as human beings rather than seeing someone as the evil other and finding out that they were connected instead of divided. The Franciscan priest Richard Rohr writes, "There's not a native Hindu, Buddhist, Jewish, Islamic, or Christian way of loving. There's not a Methodist, Lutheran, or Orthodox way of running a soup kitchen. There's not a gay or straight way of being faithful, nor an African-American, Hispanic, or Caucasian way of hoping." See, the heart speaks a universal language. It's the language of love. Pierre Teilhard de Chardin was a priest, a paleontologist, and a geologist. There's something very cool about that combination. I just love it. And he wrote that love is the very physical structure of the universe. That's a pretty radical statement for a scientist to make, wouldn't you agree? Radical or not, it's the truth. There is one infinite mind, and it dwells within every single one of us. It is divine love, unity, oneness. And when we let this infinite presence of love guide us without hindering it, we are shown the way to bring peace to our world. We are the vehicle through which that love is expressed, because that's what we are, love. Sometimes it's very hard to see. It can be deeply hidden. But everyone is love expressing, even the people on the other side who don't agree with me politically or have beliefs that I totally disagree with. So how do we bridge the divide? Buckminster Fuller said, I love him, "You never change by fighting what's existing. To change, build a better model that makes the existing one obsolete." Wouldn't it be great if it was obsolete to have war? Well, that's our job. When something is ready to transform, then we are here to support it happening, midwifing what wants to emerge into manifestation. And I think love is seeking an outlet through every single one of us, and that's how we build a new model that makes the old one obsolete. And it is time. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
You know, when it was time for colonialism to end, Gandhi provided the leadership. When the time came for legal institutional racism to end, Martin Luther King showed up on the scene. When apartheid had reached its end, Nelson Mandela arrived. And I believe that the next transformation will not hinge on one individual, but with each other. A we space. We is smarter than me, you see. There's a saying that the next Buddha will be the Sangha, the community. We are the second coming. That's what that means. But we won't get there if we keep this giant chasm of division between us. So, what is your heartbreak? What is happening in this world that's breaking your heart? What moves you to heart-centered, compassionate action? Would you be willing to spend some time this week in asking yourself that question?
Yes.
Good, because we have more homework coming. So ask yourself, when you see what's happening to human society or the natural world, what breaks your heart? Ask. And then allow any emotion to come forth as you're considering that. Let it come. Let it come, rise, and fall. Did you know that emotion has a life cycle of 90 seconds? Unless we try to squash it, and then it's a lifetime. So let it come. And then center yourself in gratitude and ask your heart, what is one thing you can do to be a healing presence? Are you up for it?
Yes.
We're all here to be the one to make the difference in our world, in our families, in our communities, in our just in our own lives. And I have some good news for you. Are you ready? The eagle has landed. Yes.
All I can say is amen to that whole talk. Ugh. I really believe that unity, that one power, one presence, and one